Die Übersetzung von Jans Stimme vom Deutschen ins Englische wurde mit einer KI erstellt.
As for what I think about all of this, I also live with an inner fear because my family is here, my children are here. Seeing what is happening around us, especially what happened 2 days ago when a drone struck a store, I once again see negligence on the part of the police, the military, and our authorities. Nobody seems to be thinking about security, and nobody is even taking basic steps to protect important locations.
I have returned to Posad Pokrovskaya once again, this small village in southern Ukraine, situated between Mykolaiv and Kherson. When I was here last year, I left thinking of it as a village of hope. Now I am back. New houses have been built, roads have been repaired, but while I have been here, drones have struck repeatedly, and so Posad Pokrovskaya has become, for me, a symbol of life in Ukraine itself, a life lived between hope and fear.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hello, I'm Jan Jessen, war and crisis correspondent for Funke Media Group. You can find my reports in NRZ, WAZ, Berliner Morgenpost, and Hamburger Abendblatt. I'm back in Posad Pokrovskaya. Many of you already know this place. We have featured it several times on this podcast before, and we'll include links in the show notes. As I said, this village lies in southern Ukraine, just a few kilometers from Kherson, a city that comes under attack almost every day. In 2022, Posad Pokrovskaya was a frontline village. Russian and Ukrainian forces faced each other here. There were around 400 strikes every day. Almost every house was damaged. Everything had been destroyed. The cultural center, the school, the kindergarten, everything. Before the war, 2,400 people lived here. Many fled, but several hundred have since returned. I remember our first visit to Posad Pokrovskaya in late 2022. In fact, we were only passing through on our way to Kherson, but I noticed people living amid the ruins. What struck me was that people were returning to a place that had become little more than a landscape of rubble. Since then, we have followed this village and some of its residents, returning from time to time to see how reconstruction is progressing and what prospects people see for the future. When I came back this time, though, I immediately sensed that the mood had changed. Posad Pokrovskaya is once again within range of Russian drones. The contrast was surreal. On the one hand, there were children playing in a park, a remarkable and hopeful project that we will come back to later. On the other hand, I found myself standing at a gas station we had visited countless times before, and that gas station had become a ruin. On June 5th, a Russian Shahed, or Jeran, drone struck it. Four people were killed in the attack. One of them was a woman I knew. We used to stop there often for coffee and hot dogs. One of the saleswomen I had come to know over the years was killed in the June 5th attack. And it was not the only gas station that had been hit. While I was in Posad Pokrovskaya, the village's second gas station also came under attack. The morning after the strike, I spoke to Ivan, the attendant. He was standing on the forecourt, while workers had already begun repairs. Ivan was wearing body armor, more precisely, a fragmentation vest. It was the first time he had ever worn one, and somehow, despite everything, he is trying to keep everyday life going.
In the middle of the night, an FPV drone hit the canopy. Shrapnel flew across the station, but thank God everyone survived. We'll board up the windows with OSB panels, and everything will be fine. The gas station is operating as usual.
The FPV drones Ivan is talking about are small kamikaze drones. They do not have a particularly long range, perhaps around 20 kilometers, but they carry explosive charges and are guided directly into their targets by operators. What is new is that the Russians are now using Molniya drones. These are also kamikaze drones, but cheap fixed-wing devices made from aluminium tubing and plywood. They are crude and inexpensive, costing around $500 apiece, but they have a greater range than conventional FPV drones. That is probably one of the reasons why Posad Pokrovskaya is being attacked again. The village is actually relatively far from the front line, more than 30 kilometers away. But these Molniya drones are now evidently reaching the village and striking targets there. The Shahed drones I mentioned earlier, known in Russia as Jaran drones, are long-range drones with much larger warheads than FPV drones. It was one of those that completely destroyed the other gas station. Ivan was lucky in a way, but he told me that all gas stations are effectively marked as red dots, potential military targets, and he admitted that he has no idea what will happen next. Perhaps his station too will be struck by a Shahed or Jaran drone and destroyed. But with a kind of fatalism, he simply said, "These things happen, and it is not only the gas stations that are being attacked." On the morning I arrived in Posad Pokrovskoye, the village store in the center was hit as well. It is just a small corner shop, the kind of place where people buy their everyday necessities. When I got there, the damage was still plainly visible. All the windows had been shattered and had since been replaced with plywood sheets. Shrapnel marks were clearly visible on the shelves and throughout the building. The facade itself was scarred by the blast. And what struck me, much as it had with the gas station, was what happened next. One of the saleswomen had been injured and taken to hospital. Yet that same evening, people cleaned up the damage. And the next day, the shop reopened. Because people need to buy groceries. And because giving up is simply not an option. Vadim works alongside Oleg, whom you heard at the beginning. We have spoken about Oleg several times on this podcast. Together with friends, the local resident founded an initiative called More Action, Less Talk. Over the years, they have carried out countless reconstruction projects. Vadim is one of the volunteers, and he speaks with remarkable calm, without any drama.
My name is Vadim, and I have been living in Posad Pokrovskoye for the third year, since 2024. What can I say? Over the last few months, and perhaps even the last few weeks, the situation has not been very good. Drones and Shahed drones continue to fly over the area, and unfortunately, there have already been incidents that resulted in fatalities. But overall, we are somehow managing and carrying on.
It is something you encounter again and again across Ukraine, a kind of resignation to fate, a certain fatalism. People know they are living in danger, but at the same time, they tell themselves that life has to go on. Yet in Posad Pokrovskoye, you can also sense something else. People are increasingly frustrated with their own government. Part of that frustration stems from the fact that Kyiv made big promises when it came to reconstruction, but so far relatively little has materialized. To be fair, some progress has been made. Around 100 new houses have been built, some of them with state funding. But I think people had expected much more, especially since President Zelensky himself visited the village and made major promises to the residents. And that is what concerns Oleg as well. He is critical of the authorities and says they are not doing enough to protect the village, particularly its vulnerable and strategically important sites, places like the local store or the gas stations.
We can help provide protection, for example, along the central streets. We can help protect buildings such as stores and gas stations, which should have had protective measures in place a long time ago. But for some reason, nobody is thinking about that. The incompetence of our authorities is frightening. Overall, however, we are doing everything we can, and I hope that everything will be all right in the end.
There is actually a relatively simple means of protection that is now being used in frontline towns and villages across Ukraine, nets. They are used to create so-called net tunnels, which have already been installed in nearby Kherson and now stretch above roads and along their sides. These mesh structures are by no means a defense against large Shahed drones or ballistic missiles, but they are effective against FPV drones, intercepting them and reducing the force of explosions. They save lives, and they are proving to be a very effective solution. Oleg himself received a considerable number of these nets for his initiative through donations from a Norwegian organization. But what he lacks are workers, and the Poles needed to erect them and build these protective corridors. And that is what frustrates him. In his view, the authorities are simply not doing enough to protect the village. Another issue weighing heavily on Oleg is something entirely different. As I mentioned, they are already struggling to find workers. At the moment, large numbers of men of military age are being picked up by recruitment authorities. As a result, Oleg and his friends are increasingly short of volunteers for their initiative. This too is becoming a growing problem and a source of mounting criticism. People complain about the so-called TCCs, the territorial recruitment centers, which many accuse of using heavy-handed methods, picking men up, taking them to training camps, and then sending them straight to the front. But Oleg has continued his work, regardless. Over the years, his initiative has laid water pipes, repaired roofs, and delivered humanitarian aid to neighboring villages and to vulnerable residents in Posad Pokrovsky itself. One project in particular struck me as remarkable. They launched a mobile cinema. Using their bus, they traveled to remote villages with a screen and projector, giving children the chance to watch films. I joined them in Luch, a village just outside Posad Pokrovsky. Only 230 people live there, including 16 children, and I saw it for myself. Some of the children had come, and they were absolutely delighted. They were genuinely enjoying the screening. And that is exactly what Svetlana, who works at the local cultural center where the event took place, told me.
This is a very important project for the children because in the situation we are currently living in, they have very few opportunities for entertainment. You understand the circumstances we are facing right now. Here, children can come, watch a movie, have fun, and forget for a while about what is happening in Ukraine. That is extremely important for children at this time.
But back to Posad Pokrovsky. When you drive through the village today, you see many things at once. First, there is the destruction I have just been talking about, the fresh destruction, whether it is the gas stations or the village store. At the same time, there are still countless ruins dating back to 2022. The school is destroyed, the kindergarten is destroyed, the cultural center lies in ruins, and many private homes are still damaged as well. But on the other hand, you see newly built houses, freshly plastered facades and children's bicycles parked outside, and you can tell that a great deal has already been accomplished. The roads have been paved and are more or less in good condition. Electricity is stable. All of this has taken time, but you can clearly see that things have changed for the better. That is what Lena told me, an elderly woman I met in a park with her granddaughter. The park itself is another beautiful project built by Oleg and his friends. They put up wooden pavilions, built a playground, and installed exercise equipment. It is simply a lovely place where people can relax and where many families now come with their children. And among them was Lena, who had come to the park with her granddaughter.
Hello, my name is Lena. I've been living in Posad Pokrovsky for quite a long time. It's much better here now than it was when we first arrived or returned. When we first came here, there was nothing but ruins. We put a lot of effort into living in normal conditions. Of course, there are still many things we lack. But when you see how things are now, it makes you happy. Before, when we drove to the store, I would just cry. We would look at all the destroyed houses, and I would cry. It was painful to see. Now it's a little better. It's encouraging to see children appearing here again. You can hear songs, laughter in the evenings, and there are young people here too. But overall, of course, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done. We may need another 10 years to rebuild if we continue to receive help. On our own, we simply won't be able to rebuild all of this.
And it wasn't just Lena's granddaughter who was there. There were plenty of other children as well. And it was genuinely wonderful to see. Of course, there was something almost surreal about it. The day before, a drone had struck the village, and now the playground was full of children. But it was also a powerful sign that life in the village was moving forward again. The children were playing, laughing, trying out all the playground equipment. It was beautiful to watch. And you could tell how proud Oleg and his team were of this project, because in a way it has helped bring life back to the village. But the question, of course, is whether reconstruction alone is enough. People also need to feel safe. And that is precisely the problem. Oleg had a drone detector with him, a small device that emits an acoustic warning whenever a drone is approaching, and time and again, you could hear it sounding the alarm. It meant that drones were operating in the immediate vicinity of the village. Not all of them made it into Posad Pokrovsky, but you could literally hear the danger. The detector would emit this strange beeping sound, and on the screen you could see that a drone was 2 kilometers away, 3 kilometers away, and naturally that is unsettling. One of Oleg's friends, who joined us later in the park, spoke very clearly about what he believes the village is still lacking and where he sees its biggest problems.
скоро буде 63. Ну, ситуація в селі яка була? У нас проста ситуація.
Well, what is the situation in the village now? It's a simple village situation. There are no jobs, no factory, or anything like that. How can I put it? There's no school, no kindergarten. As for the water supply, well, I don't know. The water towers are old. To build a proper water system, there should be local wells, so people could get water connected to their homes more easily. Especially elderly people could use some help getting water pipes run to their houses. Other than that, if we speak honestly, there are many, many things that still haven't been done. And that starts with the simplest things. The military simply need to be, how should I say, more careful around civilians. First of all, they shouldn't drive military vehicles right up to the store. They should use ordinary vehicles. Military vehicles can be hidden somewhere nearby, and then they can walk a little. Because who suffers the most? Civilians. And afterward, the military won't pay a single kopeck for any of the damage.
What Volodymyr was talking about touches on an uncomfortable truth. The attack on the completely destroyed Okeyko gas station happened in the early afternoon of June 5th. At that time of day, there are obviously many civilian customers stopping to fill up their cars or buy something. Attacking such a place is indefensible, but at the same time, it is also true that these gas stations serve as gathering points for soldiers. Many servicemen stop there and are often given free coffee or food. That inevitably turns these places into military targets. And that is exactly what Volodymyr was criticizing. Of course, one might ask, if the situation in the village is becoming dangerous again, why do people stay? It is a question I have asked myself many times while traveling across Ukraine. Especially in towns and villages where the front line had moved dangerously close, where daily life had become genuinely life-threatening, I met people again and again and spoke with them, and I still find it remarkable that so many choose to stay rather than flee. One of them was a young woman I met in the park. She was there with her two children. Her name is Oleksandra, and she returned to Posad Pokrovskaya a few years ago, and she told me why she intends to stay.
Because this is our home. Our parents are here. We grew up here. We were born here. And to put it simply, we don't really belong anywhere else. We also left for a while, and people often don't understand what it is like to lose your home, to lose everything, to take just a couple of bags and leave with children in your arms. Besides, nowhere is completely safe anyway. Our souls are here, probably. Here, you know everyone. You can visit your parents and relatives. We grew up here. This is our home.
And staying also requires places for children. At least that is what Vasil believes. Vasil is one of Oleg's volunteers and has been involved in the initiative for years. His own son was killed in the war, and perhaps because of that, he is especially committed to helping children. He told me why this work matters so much to him.
Ole invited me to join his organization, and that's how I started working with him. Right, Ole? We've been working together for almost 4 years now. I do my best for all our children. I want them to come here, spend time outdoors, and enjoy themselves. As you can see, children come here with their mothers, older kids and younger ones alike. They use the exercise bars, play around. We've planted trees here as well. That's basically what it's all about.
As evening fell, we all sat together for quite a while. There was barbecue, and we shared a vodka or two. It was a warm and relaxed atmosphere, a genuinely lovely evening. Oleg's son played music. He's a very good guitarist. You could see parents sitting on benches with their children, young people hanging out together, and for a moment Posad Pokrovskaya felt like an ordinary village again, a beautiful, peaceful place. The park, too, seemed almost idyllic. It was a wonderful evening, but of course everyone knows that things are becoming more difficult again in Posad Pokrovskaya, and I found that deeply tragic, because this village had only just begun to recover. It had only just started to find its way back to normality, and now it is once again within range of Russian drones. Once again, these drones are attacking the village and making life difficult for the people who live here. They simply are not being left in peace. And I honestly don't know what lies ahead for Posad Pokrovsky. My fear is that if the drone attacks intensify again, some people will decide to leave once more, if only to protect their children. But I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that all the positive things I saw in Posad Pokrovsky continue to take root. I hope the people here are given the chance to live normal lives again, to live in peace and in safety. That's what I wish for them. And we'll keep you updated. I'm certain that I'll be returning to Posad Pokrovska before long. And when I do, I'll tell you how the people here are getting on. That's it for today's episode of In Crisis Mode. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister. He is a journalist and works for one of Funke Media Group's radio stations. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and follow us. It helps make our work more visible. And here's a question for you. If a homeland needs protection in order to remain a homeland, who do you think bears the responsibility? The state, the military, international aid, or first and foremost, the people themselves? Write to me and tell me what your answer is and why. Krisenmodus@funkemedian.de. Take care of yourselves. See you soon. Bye for now.